actually 7:03. Welcome to this meeting of Tuesday, August 13th, 2019. Again, we'd like to call this meeting to order. If you would please stand as Mr. Robertson leads us with the invocation, and if you remain standing as Councilmember Beck does the Pledge of Allegiance.
Bow with me if you will. Our Father, we thank you for your many and abundant blessings that you have bestowed upon this great community of Reedley and its citizens. And we ask you we thank you for the freedoms that we enjoy and our ability to meet here tonight to be involved in community decisions. We pray for our council members and the agenda that is set before them this evening. We ask for your wisdom and guidance in these important decisions and discussions. We ask this in your name. Amen.
Amen. Please join the council in the salute to our nation's flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Beck?
Here.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Here.
Councilmember Fass?
Here.
Councilmember Cellino?
Here.
Mayor Pignot?
Here. Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda?
Yes, Mayor, there is one from staff. We are going to pull item 11 off of the agenda tonight. This was a public hearing on the subdivision map and final map for the Aspen and Reed development. Our land surveyor has advised that he's not yet ready to give us a final map, and for that reason, we're going to pull it off. I do also want to let you know we discovered from self-help just this afternoon that the mailings to the full community about the community meeting that was going to be held last night did not go out as they thought they had. And so self-help would like to do a community meeting prior to this item coming to council. They're going to reschedule that for next week. So this item will be brought back after they're able to fully brief the community and after our land surveyor gets a full map in place. So we are pulling this item number 11 off of the agenda tonight, and we will bring it back to council at a future meeting.
Can I ask questions on that one? Now, will they be sending information to all neighborhoods close by there?
Yes, they will. And they thought they had, and they discovered this afternoon that the person that was in charge of mailing had missed a stack of mailings, which is why we didn't have the participation last night, we thought. We actually had participation of one, and that was actually Mary Fast that came. They were terribly embarrassed, and it looks like it may have been an intern mistake. So they do want to reach out to the community. They are going to notify all the residents, and this time I guarantee you those residents are going to get that mailing. So, yeah.
Very good. So we pulled item 11. Call for motion.
Motion to approve the remaining items.
Second.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Cellino?
Yes.
Mayor Pignot?
Yes. Public comment. It provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the City Council on items of interest to the public within the Council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It is a policy of the Council not to answer questions impromptu. Questions or complaints will be referred to the City Manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. Are there any comments from the public? Being none, we move on to consent agenda. Agenda items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under a consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinances Only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Are there any items the council wishes to pull from the consent agenda?
I would like to pull number three.
I'm sorry, number three, did you
yes.
say?
I'd like to pull number two and nine.
I'll make a motion to approve the items that are left on the agenda.
Second.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Mayor Pinon?
Yes. Okay, we move on to
item two.
Okay, item two, approve mayor's nomination to fill one commission vacancy on the airport commission.
And I'll go ahead and take this one for, so.
Thank you, City Manager.
Okay, two questions I had. Is there a residency clause for this commission? And number two, where did Mr. Ritchie go?
Mm-hmm. I'll start with number two. Mr. Ritchie is removing himself from the commission after many years of dedicated service there. He has other things he's looking into doing, and okay. unfortunately, we are really sorry to see him go.
Yeah.
I think he's been exceptional for that commission. So to replace him, the applicant you see does not live in Reedley. However, this is one of the few commissions that does not have a residency requirement. There's a few reasons for that. Namely, an airport commission, we are really interested in making sure that we have folks who are somehow connected with aviation or that airport. We have a lot of people who rent hangars out there who do not live in Reedley, and the airport itself is not in Reedley. So the commissioner applicant that you see is coming from Clovis, but he's got a lot of aviation experience and is very familiar with our airport, so I think he will be good. So to answer your question succinctly, this particular commission does not have a residency requirement.
Okay. Thank you. That was the only questions that I have.
Any other questions from the council? Any questions from the public? Or comments?
I'll make a motion to approve number two.
I'll second it.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Mayor Pinon?
Yes. Item three, approval of expense reimbursement for Councilmember Fass. Administrative services. Paul?
I'll go ahead and take this one as well then.
Sure.
Mr.
Okay. You know, in reading the article here, we have a time limit on submitting these items here. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that some of the items are beyond the 30-day limit. Mm-hmm. Now, was this information given to the person submitting this request before it was brought to us?
Well, this policy on council expenses for mileage and for travel was recently put in place just this last budget season. We amended the policy to put in place that expenses shouldn't go longer than 30, 60
right.
days.
Right.
So this is sort of a new policy that we're all dealing with and working with. And I do believe that the council member was trying not to overwhelm us with smaller expense reimbursements at $10, $15 here and there. But for budgeting purposes, we actually would prefer the smaller, the 10, the 15, so that we can keep it all within the same fiscal year. So I think this is something where it's a new policy and just all getting used to it. Does that answer the question?
Well, it does, but, you know, if we have a policy that we have to follow, and I'm a strong believer in policies, if we vote on the policy, then we have to follow it. So what I would like to do is approve what's within the 38 limit, but not above that.
Ah.
Now that's up to me. It's up to the rest of the council. I know it's important for us to know that what this mm-hmm. new policy is all about. I've never submitted over the years because we didn't have this policy.
Mm-hmm.
But now we understand what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as I'm concerned, whatever the council wants, I've already mentioned my feelings.
Yeah. Personally, I don't have a problem with approving it
okay.
because it is a new policy. We're kind of trying to get adjusted to it. I think maybe later down the line, if it continues, then we'll have to, I would look at the
right.
way you're thinking about it, that we
right.
shut it off at the 30 days, because if it helps staff do their work, I think that's more
sure.
important. But I think it being so fresh, I don't have a problem with this particular issue here.
You know, I don't either. That, I wanted to bring it up to so that we can discuss and we understand what the policy is all about.
Yeah.
And maybe
any policy that we put together, we have to follow. That's all I'm concerned about.
And maybe what we'll do as staff, tomorrow, let me make a copy of the recent policy and put it in your boxes so that you have a fresh copy of it and can review it again. Because we did make several changes, not just the expense reimbursement, but any travel that's covered by the city will go to council in advance unless time doesn't permit, and then it'll be ratified after. So there are some important changes to be cognizant of as we move through. So let me make a copy tomorrow for all of you, just so that it's fresh for all of you to look at.
Do I understand correctly, is it for more effective and efficient record keeping?
That's true. Yes, Mayor. Yes.
Very good. Any other questions from the council?
Public.
Any questions or comments from the public? Being none, we have motion.
Motion.
And I'll second it if everybody approves it.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Bettenhoy?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Can I vote on this?
Oh, Scott?
I should have asked ahead, I'm sorry.
It's okay, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's there is a financial benefit to you, so it's probably better that you don't.
Okay, I'll abstain.
For the record, yeah.
Thank you.
Mayor Pignon?
Yes.
Good catch.
Item 9. Adopt resolution 2019-0733, authorizing the city manager to enter into a contract for professional consultant services with Mark Thomas to perform a roadway safety signing audit at various locations throughout the city and preparation of construction documents. John, engineering.
Thank you. Yeah, John Robertson, city engineer. Can I answer any questions on this item?
Okay, I noticed on the second page of this report, the fiscal impact, it stated that there was 50% of the funds would be paid for by the HSIP funds. But my question is, where does the other half come from at this point?
The other half is covered through Measure C flexible funding. So we will pay, so the contract is 100% paid at this time. Through Measure C and the HSIP funding. We believe that we will not spend the full amount that was given to the city for this project, and that any remaining construction dollars that are left over, the remaining 75% of the funds, will then can then be carried over to cover that other 50% of the design cost. The program itself will not let us assign development or design engineering costs above the 25% at this time, so I can't use the HSIP funding at this time for the cover the full fee. So I have to cover it with Measure C till now, and then once we finish the project, any remaining funds will go back to then kind of reimburse that Measure C fund back that we pay them out of.
Okay, thank you. That's the only question I have.
John, now this survey now, is it going to be just main thoroughways or is it neighborhoods?
It's the main thoroughways.
Just
Yeah, it's really the arterials and a few collectors, but mostly the arterials.
All right, good. All right, thank you.
Any other questions from the council? Comments or questions from the public?
Move to
approve. Motion.
Move to approve.
Second.
I apologize, who did the second? Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Mayor Pignon?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Bettencourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Administrative business, item 11. Adopt resolution number 2019-05.
We skipped 11, but we need to hit number 10 first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Workshop. Presentation and discussion of general fund forecast, fiscal years 2020-2025. Paul?
Yes.
Administrative
So Mayor and Council, we had several months ago mentioned to you that as we embark upon this sort of effort to determine what we're going to do with our budget, we thought a critical component was to give you a forecast looking out the next 5 years. Obviously, no one knows exactly what's going to happen for the next 5 years, so there are many, many assumptions that had to be made. So as we are looking at this, however, there were some numbers that came back that were so concerning to Paul and I. We really wanted to share those with the council, with the community, with staff. And so I want to thank the police department for being here. We specifically asked if the union and some police members could be here to take a look, because we do know that at the point that we had mentioned ballot measure, there was some concern about the existing Measure G. There was some concern about public safety. We want to be transparent in our entire process. So we did ask if they could be here tonight just to hear the forecast. And so I appreciate them coming. Thank you very much. So what we want to do is walk you through the next 5 years of general fund. This is only general fund. This does not include enterprise funds, capital funds, anything like that. This is simply general fund. Paul is going to talk about the different assumptions that were made and then look at how potentially a ballot measure might fill in that, and if not, we won't tonight go into what cuts would have to be made over the next 5 years. But obviously, there are a lot of options we have as we look into the future. It could include a ballot measure for sales tax. It could include seeking additional grants. It could include some cuts. So we want you to have the numbers first, and then over the course of the next few months, we can talk about options moving forward. So Paul, take it away.
Thank you, City Manager. Good evening, Mayor and City Council. This was a profoundly important project to the city, something that City Manager and I both felt that was a very timely subject, especially given what's going on with the broader economy, with the issues that are directly impacting us as a city and other cities in California, the CalPERS crisis that we've been well versed on for now many years, the rising benefit costs in California. The ground is shifting underneath us more often and more severely than it really ever has in my 16 years in public service, and that's even going through the Great Recession. Given where we're at with our budget, and that we have a balanced budget for this year, and all of the sort of clouds on the horizon, as well as some of the opportunities that the city could be taking advantage of in the future, just to lay all that out, this was a very complex project. It took us several months. We started this back in May. We did do a five-year forecast several years ago. It was the first time we'd ever done anything like that as a city. We took a different approach back then. This time it was even more of a deep dive. We spent more time on it. We actually looked at 7 years of past data. We also looked at what's changing in the future. So not just to say what's happened in the future is now going to continue on into the for the next 5 years. So that said, this forecast covers the last 7 years as the basis point as far as what we've been averaging, and covers what we think is going to happen in the next 5 years. And we have a lot of good data to support where we think we're going. And if these numbers are even 80% correct or 70% correct, they're still fairly sobering as a city, and we're not alone in this process. The city manager, I think, has done a great job about talking about all of the maladies, the very similar maladies that are affecting cities in California. So we are not alone. Many cities are doing this right now, and if they're not doing it, they will be doing it very soon. So turning, this is a little different. I don't have a PowerPoint tonight because I think the information plays better to a piece of paper. And I do apologize, it's such a large piece of paper, but I didn't want it to be something that we squinted at. And then the slides have a lot of words on them instead of just brief bullet points, because we thought that the council and whoever else is interested may want to go back to this later and read through it, and it might make more sense if it's written out a little bit more. So that said, we'll turn to the first page, and that's the objectives of the forecast. We've talked a little bit about sort of the overall picture here, but we're trying to forecast the available revenue and expenditures from the years 2020 through 2025, which covers not this fiscal year, but the one after that and four more beyond that. So as part of that, we look at the history for the years FY 2013
through this current budget year for the expenditure and revenue trends. So we're not just basing it on what we think is going to happen. The past performance, a lot of areas of our budget stay pretty consistent from year to year, where if it's been growing at 3%, we can assume that those are going to grow for 3% more going into the future. So those are good assumptions that we can make. We want to independently review different areas of our budget. We have three primary areas in our general fund, as well as any other operating fund. That's maintenance and operation, our capital for projects and equipment purchases, and finally, personnel. Personnel is the biggest part of our budget. It's the most complex. It has the most moving parts. We want to independently review our revenues by our functional sources, because we also don't want to sandbag our revenue. We want to make sure that we're being realistic on what we think is going to come in. And namely, we want to incorporate the projected increases to CalPERS, especially in the area of unfunded actuarial liability. That's the deficits we have at the state level for our pensions, and other benefit areas like medical and our workers' compensation. Those have seen steady increases over the last 6 or 7 years, very steady, and sometimes market increases, especially in workers' compensation. We've been very lucky through very aggressive management with our medical costs, by getting out of CalPERS, by changing carriers only when it's necessary, but we've been able to keep medical costs low. But we don't know when that trend is going to discontinue. We're going to plot out the revenue and expenditures for those future years to determine our cash position, because in the general fund, it's all about cash and our ability to balance our future budgets. And we also want to include in the discussion forecasted revenue from a possible tax measure and illustrate the effects under different scenarios of a tax measure. Again, possible, not a foregone conclusion. What's notable is that it does not include projections of other operating funds with existing or projected issues. So the council's been briefed in the past on the issues in the Water Enterprise Fund. We refinanced our water bonds to save money. We've taken a lot of different initiatives forward to try to operate that fund as efficiently as possible, but we still have some ongoing issues in water that we have to manage. And also our gas tax. Our gas tax continues to fall flat of our projections. We're seeing gas consumption go down. The prices have been higher this last 6 months, so we expect to see a little bit of a bump. But again, it's an area of concern for the city. So although our concerns tonight are primarily on the general fund, we have a lot of other issues that we're constantly apprising the council of. So tonight's just about the general fund. All right, moving on. So the first area, and probably the most simple area to forecast, was in the area of maintenance and operations. Maintenance and operations in the general fund covers things like office supplies, PG&E, pretty much any number of, it covers all the utilities that we pay, anything that we spend in planning and building for the building official, development activities, that all comes out of the general fund maintenance and operation. It buys the bullets for the police department, it buys them new guns, it pays for services they use for crime. I'm sorry, I'm not speaking to it very well, but anything the police department had to fight crime. So, thank you, Chief. That about sums it up, to fight and prevent crime. So the maintenance and operational, we took a 7-year average, and the annual increase averages it out to 3.17% per year. That's pretty consistent. I used to work for the city of Fresno. I worked in Tulare for a little bit. That's pretty consistent. 2 to 3 to 4% a year is about right for your increases. A lot of those increases are passed along by the vendors we buy stuff from. Vendors are passing along price increases to us, and it pretty much follows what the general cost of living increases have been. So that's about 3.17%. So we were able to project those going off into the future with some certainty. So those numbers we feel are pretty solid going off into those next 5 years. Capital expenditures is another major area. So remember, we have maintenance and operations, capital, and then personnel. Capital expenditures were a little more difficult to project, so we had to sort of make an assumption for future activity, because there's been some spikes in what we spend our capital dollars in the general fund for. We essentially only spend capital for bare essentials out of the general fund when it's not available somewhere else out of some other eligible funding stream. For instance, the public safety sales tax we've used to purchase additional vehicles or replacement vehicles for the police department, as well as purchasing a new ladder truck for the fire department, as an example. Those dollars, only some of them came out of the general fund. They came out of other sources as well, like public safety sales tax. So that said, we made an assumption going off into the future because pretty much every year out of the last 7 years, we've spent some money for capital needs. And this is not just police and fire. We also spend capital money to make improvements to parks in the city. But again, usually only bare essential safety needs are funded because we just don't have enough general fund monies to go really take care of those bigger needs out there. So that said, we're spending on average about $80,000 a year, if you average out all those past years. So we just used $80,000 going off into the future. To assume nothing is going to be spent on capital, we felt would be irresponsible because there's always some public safety and really critical needs that have to be funded. So we wanted to have a place in the budget for those. Okay, so those are sort of the quick ones. Personnel is a lot more complex, a lot more moving parts, as I previously said. I'm going to be moving through the next five or six pages fairly quickly because it gets really dense and really deep very quickly. And I would definitely entertain any questions, and we can always come back to it later. But I'm going to be going through these pages pretty quickly. And this is just here for your own reference later on, or if you have questions from the public, anything like that that may come up, there's some additional information. But we wanted to include these steps so that the council and the public would have a good feeling for where these numbers are coming from, so that there's no feeling or thought that maybe we just kind of pulled these out of thin air. These are based on actual historical trends and knowledge of what's changing into the future. We did have to make some assumptions, but we feel they're very responsible assumptions. So that said, we had to look at all wage expenditures for all funds combined to really figure out what the average historical wage increases have been in the city. And most of the MOUs and most of the pay increases that the council has been approving in the last 6 or 7 years have been for very nominal increases, nothing too crazy. We've seen anywhere from 1% COLAs to 2% COLAs. There was a brief period of time in which we had higher COLAs, but they were offset almost entirely by increases to pension contributions that the employees had to shoulder. So we've been very reasonable in the COLAs that have been given to staff. We feel, and I think the council also feels that way, but the average increase to wages has actually been closer to 5%. And that's because wages is more about a bigger picture of you have employees that while they're here are getting step increases. So the longer they're here, they move up the pay scale. And I think everybody knows how that works. So you also have people who get promoted. You have reclassifications. We've had some stipends that have been paid out in lieu of COLA. So when you look at the actual increases to wages since FY 2013-14, it's actually been 4.87% per year instead of a much lower number. And that's because, again, you have a lot of different activity happening in wages other than just COLA increases, those step increases and other such activity. So that said, wages is just one part of personnel costs. We have all the benefits, the CalPERS, the taxes, everything that goes along with it. And that's where these next pages go off into. So I'm going to change to the next page. We're on page 6 now. The page numbers are in the bottom right-hand corner. We had to determine the historical portion of full-time wage expenditures for all the city funds combined, and that's done by the department. So you'll see the departments listed and what the wages are as a percent of total for all departments in the city. Moving on to page 7, we had to go into the historical dollar amount of those wages borne by the general fund. So we had to find out what the whole city was and then just focus on the general fund. So you have the general fund wages down below by department. So that was reviewed and analyzed for the last 7 years. Moving on to step 4, and again, if I'm moving too quickly, stop me or we can come back to it. Page 8, we had to look by what the percentage amount of the personnel wages were paid by the general fund. So we looked at the last 7 years and we found that by and large, it was very consistent for some of the departments, and other departments it was not consistent. Some departments have gone from a smaller percentage in the general fund to a bigger percentage, and that's due to a multitude of factors. The council may remember that when the RDA was shut down, we were getting an administrative allowance of $250,000 that was coming into the general fund to pay for our dissolution costs. The state took that away from us. $250,000 overnight was gone out of our budget. So we had to move things around. We had to shuffle because services had to continue to be provided. So that said, for those departments that were impacted by various activities that have affected their funding sources, we used the most current allocations instead of the more longer historical snapshot because we felt that was a more accurate rendering of what the future holds because those previous revenue streams are not there anymore. Okay, moving on to step five. We want to apply what we've learned, the 4.87%, and that to the full-time wage costs going forward. So that's what we've done here. So you can see that those wage costs now have been applied by department going off. Now step six, we want to take a look at part-time wages, overtime, and other benefit costs. So again, personnel has a lot of different costs, so we looked at part-time, overtime, and all the associated costs with those. And we looked at the average annual increases for instance, the first one across the top, part-time wage costs. We've seen part-time wage costs increase for any number of reasons, one being the increase to the California minimum wage, but we're not gonna blame that. That'd be too easy. We've had increases in the amount of programs that we offer the community. For instance, if we pick up a contract with the Kings Canyon School District, and we're now going to offer a program at a certain school, that's going to cause our part-time salaries to go up, but that's offset by the revenue. So that said, though, that's why we wanted to take a long-term look at what the average annual increase has been, and those are across on the right-hand side for the average annual increase to those areas.
Okay, Paul, take a quick breath.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And
go
let
ahead.
Me, no, take a breath so that I can just remind the council why we're doing this, because it feels like we're speeding through.
Okay.
So take a breath and let me say that as a reminder, what Paul's going through right now is just some of the basic assumptions we're making that will get us to that spreadsheet that will look at 2020 to 2025. So if you feel like we're flying through this, it's because these are just assumptions of how we got to where we're going to show you in 2020. So that being said,
okay.
Continue.
So I can go slower. I just didn't want to bog us down in all the detail if we didn't have to.
Yeah, I think the main points we're going to spend a lot of time on tonight are going to be the 2020 through 2025, but it kind of felt like we were rushing through, so I wanted to just remind you these are just the assumptions we're making.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on the next page, and that would be page 11, are all the personnel assumptions that we're going to be making for benefits and part-time staff. I can jump past that, but these are all the various assumptions we had to make. And so if you look, we just didn't assume 3 or 5% for everything. Each one is custom made based on what it's actually been increasing. So it wasn't just throwing a number at a wall to see what sticks. We actually looked at individual areas to see where the increases were.
And I will say that on page 11, the one assumption that is always concerning to me every single year, and I think we even are taking a low approach looking at 2020 through 2025, is on healthcare. Our assumption so far is a 5% for health costs. We've known in years past, you may recall, it wasn't too long ago in this administration that we actually had one year where costs for medical insurance went up by 20%. So we actually are taking a fairly low approach because we don't want to bias this in a way where you feel like you've got to do a ballot measure or something like that. So we really do want to take a conservative approach to this. But I will tell you that even I think our assumption on the medical costs is a bit low. So.
Okay, so the next page, page 12, is all about CalPERS and the forecasted retirement rates, or the rates that we have to pay to CalPERS every year for all the retirement plans. We currently have 6 different retirement plans in place. So we used our actuary reports, the most current ones available. So those are the rates down below. I'll go on to page 13. And we looked at the plan enrollment across the entire city. So again, I'm not going to go into the numbers. So we looked at the entire city. Then we rolled in what those costs are by plan. That's page 14. This is just for the general fund, by the way.
And what you're seeing in the words classic versus PEPRA, you may recall a few years ago, Governor Brown put some reforms into place for the pension. Any employee who is already a member of CalPERS would be considered a classic member. Their plans will be a little higher. And PEPRA restructured pension plans, brought those costs down a bit, so new employees brought on board are what we call PEPRA employees. So as our more experienced employees retire out or leave the city and new employees come on in, those are PEPRA employees at a lower cost. So it was critically important in our forecast here that we also take some assumptions or make some assumptions on classic versus PEPRA, because as you can see from the percentages on those pension plans, dramatically different percentages of wage cost.
Yes. Now, just over a third of our employees now are covered by PEPRA. Because it's been in place now since January 1st, 2013. So that said, we took the forecasted CalPERS rates and we put those into, and that's page 15. Step 10 was to apply those forecasted increases to future personnel costs, and that's what we've done here for the CalPERS. That's step 10. And moving on, basically rolling it all up into one slide here, we want to combine all the personnel data to provide the forecasted general fund cost for personnel out for those 5 years. So that's what that, so these numbers here tie out to the graphs that you're going to see on the next couple pages. So taking this information about capital, maintenance and operations, and personnel, and we want to put it on a graph. Obviously, the biggest area of the general fund is personnel. That's in green. The maintenance and operation is shown in the orange band, and capital is shown in the red band. And you can see how the budget is forecasted to move over the next 5 years. The personnel expenditures, because they're such a big area of the budget, and they have so many moving parts, on the next page, page 18, they're broken out in a bar chart. It's just a different way of looking at the information. And you can see starting in 2013-14 at the bottom and then moving up to the more current years and then the forecasted years, how much the full-time wages are projected to be of the general fund, how much the part-time wages are growing. The red area is the CalPERS contributions, and they're set to double. So from FY 2013 to FY 2024, they're more than doubling, and that's what we've kind of always said based on what we've always seen and what people have told us. The blue is our medical costs, and that's again based on 5%, which as city manager said is probably a fairly conservative number. So these are just showing how much of the share of the pie per se that these different personnel costs are taking of the overall budget. Again, just for reference, it's a different way of looking at the information. Okay, so the next slide is, page, is talking about revenue, because the forecast to this point, we've only talked about expenditures. Revenue is a little bit easier to forecast, assuming we don't have another recession. We did not assume a recession here. We also did not assume that the population of this town would double in the next 5 years either, because again, that's probably not going to happen. We don't know if a recession is going to hit, and if it does, to what extent. So that said, we had to look back into the past and see where different areas of our revenue have grown. And so we have an average growth rate that we applied to those future years. Moving on to the next page, page 20. These are all the different areas of revenue that we track in our budget. All the historical information there. So this is what we use to forecast forward. Moving on to page 2021, we've taken the same information and we've put it into a bar chart so that you can see the various areas in our budget and how it makes up the total revenue to the general fund. So if you see the revenue is growing at about 3 to 3.5% per year. So we did assume revenue is growing. We did not assume any measurable impact from expected or future economic development. That's a very tough thing to factor into the forecast because we don't know the timing and the extent of any future economic development would have on the budget. We know that it's there, but we didn't factor it in here. Moving on to page 2022, this is sort of where the rubber meets the road. So all that stuff we just talked about rolls into how do the expenditures compare to the revenue going forward. For this is assuming status quo, our current budget forecasted forward with no new revenue coming in the door beyond what we already have. We have, going down to the table, and I actually am going to dive into the numbers here. This is the general fund historic expenditures and revenues. So for the last 7 years, you have the expenditures in the general fund going across the right, and the revenues down below. That's the second row you see here. That's the revenue. And then the excess or shortage in any given year. Now, if you notice, there are some years in which we had a shortfall. This is very typical of cities. They'll use carryover or one-time resources to cover that shortfall. And that's what we've done in several budget years. Down below where it says general fund as the heading and it has working capital, that's the fund balance in the reserve that we typically use to balance the budget from 1 year to the next, or we use one-time resources that are available in there to balance the budget from 1 year to the next. The row down below, reserve, we account for it in a separate fund, general fund reserve, but functionally it's part of the general fund. We've had some activity in the reserve. We've primarily, and this is thanks to the council's extraordinary support for us building our reserve. We have a two-month reserve policy that I'm very happy to report. We have 2 months in reserve. We meet our minimum policy. That's the nationwide minimum. Many cities are looking at increasing that now because of all those unknown factors going into the future. We did use the reserve to make a one-time legal settlement payment several years ago. We've thankfully been able to add back to the reserve, again, using one-time resources to, again, build it back up. So that, yeah, I'm sorry.
And I want to be very, very clear to the council and the community on this slide because I think the wrong perception could be out. We have not ever had a city budget over the last 8 years where the budget itself was not balanced. So when you see the general fund in the red, that does not mean that our city budget was not balanced. That means that we made up that deficit using other types of funds. For instance, we might have had some big grant that came through where we used that grant, something like that. So I just want to make sure that it's clear if this slide were to get out to the community and they say, wow, the city had 3 or 4 years where they didn't balance its budget, that is not what this slide is portraying. This is only portraying the general fund, not the city's overall budget that includes all the other funds.
Thank you. So this is the history of where the general fund's been. Moving on to the next page, and again, we can come back. Page 23. This is the first of four scenarios going off for the next 5 years of expenditures versus revenue. The expenditure growth is far greater than the revenue growth is projected to be over the next 5 years, greater so than the last 7 years. The excess is not there. Every year there's a projected shortfall. And I've been in this industry long enough, and I've seen enough cities that typically things are okay, but when things go bad, they generally start to go bad very quickly. Things compound very quickly. The first couple of years, if no action is taken, would require a drawdown of the reserve, a significant drawdown in those first 2 years, to essentially by the third year of the forecast, there is no reserve available to cover the shortfalls. The little bit that's in there is the repayment from the airport for the loan for the hangar construction from many years ago. So we, again, this is what we feel to be a very precise forecast, so we have that revenue coming in. But that reserve, it would do exactly what it was built and be put there to do. And that would be to cover those shortfalls to ensure that we can provide services to the community. Now, I think city manager has been very clear about this. We would do our best to not have it come to this quickly. This is assuming our current operations as they are. We would never let our budget be this imbalanced going into the future. And it would force the council and the staff to look at some pretty drastic solutions in the city for staffing, for services to the community. But this would be felt. This would be significant. And it actually pains me a lot to be up here saying this, because I kind of like getting a little pat on the head once in a while when we sort of put it all together and we drag it across the finish line, and staff's been great and everybody's working together. These numbers are so big and the gaps are so significant that there's just not enough magic in the wand to make this happen.
So let me kind of walk you through what happens. As you see in 2020, 2021, assuming we made no reductions, we kept things going as is, and all our assumptions on increases in costs and increases in revenue occurred. The very first year out, we are looking at a general fund shortfall, again, not all funds, general fund shortfall of a little over $500,000, $678,000. Our expectation is we would use some of the reserve to cover that. So going into the second year, 2021, 2022, the shortfall based on our assumptions would be $982,000. Again, we would use some reserve to cover that. So you're looking at that shortfall below. And from there, it compounds rather quickly because we run out of reserve to use. And so what you see in terms of general fund shortfall in any given year being $600,000, and then the next year $900,000, and then the next year $1.3 million, that $600,000, $900,000, $1.3 compounds each year because we're dragging that deficit into the next year. So by the time we get to 2024, 2025, if we made no cuts, again, we have options. We could make reductions. We could do other things. But if we made no changes to the assumption and the path we are on right now, we look at $6.5 million 2024, 2025 as the overall deficits we are accumulating over time. We would not let this happen. But in order to not let this happen, that means changes have to be made either to the way we operate, to the revenue we bring in, all sorts of things like that. So we are really giving you that dire look of, if nothing else changes, here is the worst case scenario. Well, I shouldn't say worst case. Worst case is we hit a recession and all bets are off and we really go to the table with our calculators and pencils and scratch things off. But this is the worst case scenario if we do nothing, if we just didn't even try. So as you can see, we are looking at some pretty dramatic deficits over the next few years.
I'd like to turn the page.
So would I.
I'd like to turn the page. The next page shows what you just saw, but it shows it over a longer period of time. Just very high level expenditures out of the general funds in yellow, revenues in green. You can see that the last 5-6 years going off to the current time of 1920, the gap between expenditure and revenue has been pretty tight. We've been able to manage that with one-time resources, with a grant, with additional revenue 1 year to another being carried over. But going off into the future, the gap between projected expenditures and revenues, it widens substantially. So just this, I think this graph maybe does a better job showing that those gaps just get wider. So we ran four different scenarios, and we can run more. But these are the four that we felt best captured maybe what our options are based on what we've done 10 years ago. With our Measure G, is we assumed the effect of another half-cent sales tax measure that would be placed on the March 2020 ballot. So in case people are wondering what March 2020 means, because you think, well, no, June is the California primary. 2020 is the first year that March will be the California primary. So in case you haven't read about that. So assuming that you could get on a March ballot the effective date of a tax measure would be July 1st of 2020. So we could assume additional revenue in our budget starting next fiscal year. So as soon as next fiscal year. As with any tax measure, it takes a while for it to come into effect. The first year would be a partial year. And we have some really good data on this because our Measure G public safety sales tax measure is a half cent sales tax measure. So we have a really good idea of how much revenue a half cent sales tax measure would bring in. So these are good numbers, we feel. So in the green row is the additional revenue on top of the normal general fund revenue that we have that would be able to be programmed into our overall city budget. The excess or shortages for the first couple years would turn from big red numbers to small black ones. So we would be able to balance our budget with that additional revenue. Going off into those future years, though, because of the compounded effects of the CalPERS increases, medical costs, and everything else that goes into personnel expenditures, the deficits return in those future years. And that's because, again, the expenditures are growing to such a magnitude that even a half cent sales tax measure with projected revenue does not fully cover the expanded cost. Now, again, as city manager so eloquently stated, we wouldn't let this happen, but there would be some measurable impact to our operations in order to balance the budget in those out years, given everything that we know today. So that said, much less bleak than before, but that's at a half cent sales tax measure. If the council recalls, the polling firm that was hired to poll the community was the same one that we used 10 years ago. They polled a half cent sales tax measure and a 3/4 cent sales tax measure. 3/4 cent sales tax measure actually pulled a little bit better, but both were positively viewed by the community. Moving to scenario three, assumes a 3/4 cent sales tax measure. And this is not the March ballot, but the November ballot. So if we were to move forward as a possibility on the November 2020 ballot, the effective date gets pushed out all the way to April of 2021. And that's because of the state laws concerning new tax measures. The California Department of Tax and Fee Administration, they won't put into effect a new tax measure until 110 days after the ballot. And then it has to be on the first of a quarter. So because of the November ballot, the way it would fall is that we wouldn't start to get the new tax measure in place until April of 2021. So not next year, but the year after. And we would not begin to get our first payments until July 2021. So essentially, next budget year, we could not assume any new revenue from the tax measure. So down on the the green row, it's been changed to 3/4 cent tax measure. There's no revenue assumed next budget year. But starting in 2021-22 and moving onward, you have that additional revenue being plugged into the budget. Again, it takes a couple years for it to ramp up fully. So under a 3/4 cent sales tax measure, the budget numbers, except for the first year, we would have a deficit in the first year with no new revenue coming in. Our budget picture is substantially more stable. The only impact of a late implementation of a 3/4 cent would be that we would be forced to draw down on our reserve. Again, assuming no cuts to operations, we would have to draw down on our reserve to balance the budget. And per our reserve policy, if we use the reserve, we're supposed to replenish it so that we have it available in the future. So we would have to use that new tax. Well, we wouldn't have to. It'd be up to the council's discretion. But we would work towards rebuilding our reserve for a while. So it's a difference of about $1 million, and I'll show that on the next page. If a 3/4 cent sales tax measure were to go on the March ballot, that's on page 27, by the way, I flipped the page, that's scenario four. The effective date would be next fiscal year, July 1st, 2020, again, assuming the council supported it, assuming the public supported it, which again, the polling has supported this. The first monthly payments would begin September of 2020. Because it's hitting next budget year, there's a big red circle there under the 3/4 cent measure. We could assume approximately $1 million in next year's budget because it's a partial year implementation. That $1 million allows the city budget to stay balanced for the foreseeable future. There is a little bit of shortage in those out years in 2023 and 2024 based on the forecast. Even with the additional monies, we would still have a deficit in those future years, but these deficit numbers are much more manageable. The city manager and I and staff have dealt with deficits bigger than this, one year at a time. But we've dealt with stuff like this. This is a piece of cake. I don't want to
call it a piece of cake.
Well, compared to what we just saw on those previous pages, we could do this, you know.
So there are a lot of decision points to be made as we look at the forecasted future. And a decision point number one is, do we look into the future for a ballot measure, yes or no? Decision point number two is, do we look at that ballot measure as a half cent, meaning for every dollar of something you buy, you give us half of a penny? You take a penny out of your pocket, you cut it in half, you give us half a cent. Or do we look at it at 3/4 cent? The public polling actually showed higher that our public supports 3/4 more than a half. I do not understand why, but that's what the polling showed. So decision point number one, do we bring in a tax measure, yes or no? Decision point number two, do we bring in a half cent or a 3/4 cent? But decision point number three is a really fascinating one, and that is, do we go on the March ballot or the November ballot? And there are some really distinctive things that come about with that point, and that is, if we were to go to the March ballot, the way the state law works, we have to issue what's called a declaration of fiscal emergency, meaning we go to the public and we say, we know we're going to have some budget woes, we are declaring a fiscal emergency. If we do that, it actually can't move forward, and it's not considered approved unless it's approved by a unanimous vote of the council sitting on the dais at the time the vote is made. Meaning, if all five of you are sitting up here and we decide we want to go on the March ballot, and there is anything less than a 5-0 vote, it doesn't go on the March ballot. It would go on the November ballot. There's a very distinct number associated with that, November versus March, and that's the $1 million. So going March to November is a $1 million difference. It was startling to me when we pulled the numbers and actually looked at that. But the way the state laws work, and we worked with Sacramento, the Department of
Tax and Fee Administration.
They sat us down, they walked us through everything, and that's what the numbers showed. So again, three decision points, and the most intriguing of which to me is the timing of the March versus the November. So
I've got some wet blanket stuff here next couple of
and
pages.
And we do we have the right wet blanket, thank you. Thanks for that, by the way. Just take the steam out of my presentation. So again, three decision points. We are not asking for any of those three decision points tonight. Tonight we just wanted to roll the numbers out to you and give you sheets that you could take with, you can consider, you can look at, you can talk to constituents, you can really think about. And again, what we haven't provided you here is, maybe we don't want to move forward with the tax measure. I know this council has been very conservative fiscally, does not look fondly on taxing its citizens. I don't look fondly on taxing our citizens. So the question is, what's the better balance moving into the future? But what we haven't provided to you is, what do those cuts look like if we wanted to do this without a ballot measure? By the time we get to 2024-25, those cuts look really dramatic. Our community would definitely feel those cuts. So go ahead, wet blanket.
Okay. Well, so I'm being a little facetious here, because that's obviously, this is really, really difficult for me to even bring this forward. But there's some additional considerations that are not factored into the forecast. And that's page 28. It's titled Additional Considerations. CalPERS just announced, I think it was 2 weeks ago, that their investment return in one of the biggest bull markets ever is a whopping 6.7%. And remember, they just lowered the discount rate a couple years ago, assuming a 7% long-term rate of return. They missed it again.
And I have to chime in here.
Okay.
I just have to, because of how angry I am in Sacramento and angry I am with FERS. Because you may recall, last year and the year before, when markets were coming in at astounding rates of return, and I'm talking 10%, 15%, some of my 401k investments from the private sector were even coming in at 18%. It was astounding last year and the year before. CalPERS came in at 1%. And one of the reasons that is because they withdrew very lucrative investments because they were not seen as socially acceptable. And we understand the concern of that socially acceptable, meaning tobacco or oil or what have you. But they didn't do it in a strategic pull-out approach. They just took all their investments out.
Divested.
And that, huh? Oh, I thought you said something. And so 1%. So what we were told is that was then, this is now, they're moving forward, they're being more strategic. Yes, they are going to invest with socially acceptable investments, but we're going to do better. And they didn't even hit that low mark of 7% when the market last year averaged far above 7%. So the League of California Cities, the California Association of Counties, known as CSAC, lots of folks are still challenging PERS and still moving forward in trying to make some changes with PERS. And in fact, a couple board, or one particular board member, and I think another one pretty soon, a board member of PERS has been unseated because of what's happening in PERS. So I just have to chime in on that, because this to me is one of the driving forces that is going to cause some cities to move into bankruptcy. Not our city, we will not hit bankruptcy, but some cities around the state will move into bankruptcy because of this PERS issue.
Okay. So I wasn't planning on going through all the bullets here, but over 5 years, CalPERS has returned 5.8%. So it's even worse over the last 5 years. Anytime they miss their target and they come in lower, it affects our rates that we have to pay them. And in 2 years, this loss will show up on our report that says, hey, this is how much you guys have to pay us. So it takes 2 years for the loss hitting June 30th to hit our budget. Same with the gain, but unfortunately we're not seeing that here. So pension costs in California are growing 6 times as much here than it is in any other part of the nation. So if we could pick up Reedley and move to some other state, but that's not happening. So it's taking more and more of our revenue here. And you can see the League of California Cities survey that most governments are expecting at least 50%. We're also in the midst of the longest economic expansion in 50 years. We did not assume a recession, but inevitably one will come. The next slide, again, I won't go through everything, but this just talks about the importance of having a reserve in place, what we use it for currently, what it's there for. So based on the growth in our budget, anytime we see our general fund budget go up because of whatever, cost increases or wages go up, we have to add to our reserve in order to have it be 2 months worth of expenditures. So based on where expenditures are going, we actually need to add to our reserve, not use it. So our reserve should be $2.2 million at the end of this forecast period, not $1.8 million, which is where it's at today. Because in order for it to be worth 60 days of expenditures, as expenditures go up, we've got to add to the reserve. Well, we don't have to. That would be a best practice. So that said, I won't go into all those details on the reserve. And the final slide, or just some, excuse me, the second to last page, are just some general takeaways. I think City Manager has done a great job of just wrapping it all up for us, that expenditures are going to outpace growth. And a lot of these cost increases, unfortunately, are outside of our control. CalPERS, medical rates, workers' compensation rates, that should not be ignored. And this council and staff, we really have worked very diligently to turn over every rock. I mean, we've done everything from self-fund our dental program to start a trust to fund future retiree medical. We've capped our retiree medical benefit. We've taken advantage of grants. We've done a really good job, I feel, as a group of trying to tackle this problem. So we're not coming to you, we feel, years in advance. We're only asking for this exactly at the point in time we feel it's needed, and not a moment too soon. We've talked about future economic development a little bit, and that will help as projects come online. However, timing and magnitude of the revenue, we don't know when it's gonna hit. But it's important to note that even if everything in our development pipeline were to come online in the next 5 years, if all those possible projects came to fruition, we would still have a deficit in the general fund. Significant. And again, it really pains me to bring this forward to you, because I don't want you to think of me as just bringing you bad news. But unfortunately, we feel this is the case. This final page is just to give the council and public a general idea of all the steps that are involved, and these are the same steps more or less than what the city went through 10 years ago with Measure G, should the council elect to move forward. These are the procedural steps we would have to go through to get to a March 3rd election day. Again, they would look a little bit differently if we were delayed until November, but these are the steps that we would have to go to. And if we were successful with a March 3rd election, July 1st, 2020 would be the tax measure effective date, with our first payments beginning in September 2020. So this is just to give you a general idea of all the steps we would have to go through. And if you were on council 10 years ago, you're familiar with them. So that wraps up my presentation, unless city manager has more to add.
I will just add that, again, we are not asking for any decision point from council tonight. We simply wanted to show some numbers. Obviously, questions tonight are great. We can actually do questions next council meeting as well if you need to, because we threw a lot of data at you. So the decision points for council, again, are ballot measure, yes or no, and if the answer is yes, amount, half cent versus three quarter cent, or, and the third point, November, March. So three decision points in the future that I think we need to tackle together.
You know, we're talking about revenues that are teeter-tottering. You know, if things don't work out the way we're looking at to generate that revenue, what is the worst scenario that we were looking at? I would love to see the worst scenario, what we need to do to stay balanced.
So I hesitate to say it out loud even, because I don't want our employees thinking that this is a sinking ship.
I would love to find out. I mean, that would be important for me to know how serious that would be.
Mm-hmm. Paul and I can take a look and really give maybe some bullet points on some ideas of how much things cost, so you would know that cuts could impact this area or that area or what have you of the city. Because there are all sorts of different options, not just layoffs, for instance, but we could do increases in medical premiums that employee pay, or you know, restructuring salary levels, or not buying certain pieces of equipment that we normally buy, or stretching out how long we use equipment. So there's all sorts of different tactics we can take, not just cutting services to the public. I do think that the basic data shows by 2024-25, at that point in time, if nothing else changes, that's the point in time where services get cut to the public.
The reason I'm asking is because people are going to, once we propose this tax increase, whether it's half a cent or three quarters, public are going to know, why do you want that money? Mm-hmm. And people are going to be asking questions, and I have customers that I try and communicate with them and give them as much as possible what we're doing at this level. When it comes to funding, they're always asking questions. And I need to have answers to give to the public. If you don't have those answers for the public, then we're playing a guess what? If they don't have the information, they're going to question, well, why do you need the money?
Yeah.
So it's important.
Completely agree with you, and I think part of what we really need to get out to our public is how good we have been doing at controlling costs,
exactly.
Even to the detriment, I would say, frankly, of employee groups. So Paul and Darla are working on some comparisons. In the police department, for instance, we know we are amongst the lowest paid police department around, because Kingsburg did a tax measure and raised their police salaries. Fowler did a tax measure, raised their police salaries. Dinuba has higher salaries because of Best Buy and Walmart, although frankly, Dinuba is one to watch over the next few years as all of the changes are made with distribution centers and taxing. So we know that we are amongst the lowest paid, and what we want to do is provide you some data points so you have actual data you can share with our community.
Exactly.
And frankly, even though we are amongst the lowest paid, I will still say I think we have one of the finest forces in the valley, so thank
exactly.
you very much.
Exactly. Yeah.
All
right. Thank you.
good. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Paul. Quite extensive. Mm-hmm. A lot of work went into that. So no other questions? Questions from the public?
I know.
Very good. We move on to administrative businesses.
Yes.
Item 11, adopt.
Number 12.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Number 12, approve and authorize city manager to execute a consultant agreement with David Tossing and Associates, Inc. in an amount not to exceed $10,750 for transactions and use tax measure advisory services and election coordination.
Okay.
Administrative.
Thank you again, Mayor and City Council. This is a this item is directly related to the workshop that we just concluded, and should the council support staff working towards a possible ballot measure, it's very customary to hire a consultant who specializes in the process for ballot measures to ensure that all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed. There's many, many hoops that we saw, steps in the procedural side. Each step has certain requirements that must be met. The city attorney is also well versed in this area, but the city attorney and the consultant essentially work hand in hand to make sure that everything is covered. There's been some nightmare scenarios, especially down south, where the cities have taken forward ballot measures and they give them to the state saying, we have our tax measure. The state reviews the language and says, no, you don't, because it doesn't have this language in there. It doesn't have this statement in there. True stories of ballot measures that have been invalidated. So we called around. Now, by the way, the city did use a consultant for this purpose back in 2007. It was a different consultant than the one here. The city previously has used David Tossig and Associates for its impact fee study back in, I believe, 2014. They did an excellent job with our impact fees. The city of Kingsburg most recently used DTA, I'll just say that as short, DTA for David Tossig and Associates, for their consulting, for their 1 cent sales tax measure. And they gave them a glowing recommendation. And they said, if you're gonna use a consultant, we highly recommend them. So we reached out to them, and based on our expertise that we already have, we felt like we didn't need to spend a lot of money, but we just need them to help consult on a few of the steps here and there. So what they've offered is a time and materials contract. So not just that we're gonna pay them a lump sum, that it's only how much we need them beyond what our city attorney's expertise is to help consult us, not to exceed $10,750. We would try not to use even half of that if we didn't have to, but just to have them there as a resource to make sure that nothing is missed, because it's so critical. So we would ask your consideration in this matter to move forward with David Tossig and Associates for their advisory services and election coordination. Again, by approving this contract, it does not move us forward definitely to a ballot measure. It just sets in place an agreement that should you move forward, we'll have a resource in which we can tap to move forward. So that concludes my presentation.
Any questions from the council?
Is it appropriate at this point to ask what would we use those taxes for? What are we going to put in the ballot measure requesting?
The polling that was done by FM3 services, there was a presentation that unfortunately you were not able to attend over the summer, mm-hmm. in which they used some language that is very common in California for general tax measures, centering around public safety, around streets maintenance, around public facilities such as parks, that sort of thing. And they crafted I believe it was around 75 words, ballot measure language. And we can send that presentation to you, Councilmember Fast. If you already don't have a copy, we can definitely send it to you.
I have a copy.
That it shows the proposed ballot measure language that was polled. And again, This doesn't have to be what is used, but this is what they used for the polling purposes. And public safety and streets maintenance ranked at the very top of what the public's response was.
So I jokingly say that what our public told us from that poll is that they want the triple P measure. They want parks, potholes, and public safety. So right, I don't know how that would actually ring if we did a ballot measure like that, but the public was very clear in that measure that they wanted more than simply public safety to be covered. And what's interesting about that is if we were to go with a specialized tax measure, for instance, like Measure G, the voting threshold is higher, 2/3 vote versus a simple majority plus one. Amazingly to me, and I am so anti-tax, just personally anti-tax, but our community came back, and even if we were to go with a special tax measure, it looks like, based on what the poll says, it would sail through and be approved. However, even though it could be approved as a special tax if we wanted to say it solely was for public safety or solely public safety and parks, the public was pretty clear with us in that poll that they want a general measure that would cover other types of things, like parks, like potholes, things of that nature. Public safety definitely was a big one on their horizon in their perception. But what was amazing to me is the other things that were also big to them. And frankly, that poll was very helpful for us as we looked at it from the operational standpoint of how to move forward with projects in upcoming years and where we should focus our energy based upon what the public said. So we would look at a general measure, meaning that we wouldn't specify particularly what it would go for, but keep it general. Because if we do specify, we raise that voting threshold to 2/3.
The polling results in general came back with 8 out of 10 voters support, and I'll just read it word for word. 8 out of 10 voters believe that Reedley has a great or some need for additional funding for city services. FM3 came back with that 72% was what they targeted or they pegged as the approval rate of a tax measure at 3/4 cent, 72%. They were within 1% on Measure G. So I think they forecasted, I don't remember the exact number, but they were within 1% of what actually came back. So we have a lot of confidence in their polling methods.
Yeah. And we can go back and bring that poll result data back to the council. But if you'll recall from what John Fairbanks went through in the public presentation, it was an equal share of support from Democrat, Republican, support from white versus Hispanic, support from low income versus medium versus high income. It was amazing to me that the support was really across the board. Normally, you take a look at those demographics because you want to see what element of your community does not want to see something or does want to see something. And it was strange to me that even Democrat, Republican, there was almost virtual no difference. And that spoke loudly to us about the fact that the public sees we're doing a lot with very little, and they appreciate what we have done, but they also see that more could be done.
Yeah. So. And the support was fairly consistent amongst all the council districts. There was no district that had less than 60% support, so they were all pretty high. So that said, this does not obligate us to spend any money. This would only be if the council elects to move forward. We would have this resource in place as a consultant.
Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved. Second.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Bratt?
Yes.
Councilmember Bettencourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Mayor Pignon?
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Council.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Receive information and reports. Minutes of the regular meeting of May 16th, 2019, the Airport Commission. Sarah Reed. Community Services.
Oh, that's just to receive.
Oh.
Yeah, just to receive and file.
Okay. Very good. We're up next, our council reports. Councilmember Soleno.
I have none.
Okay. Councilmember Beck.
I had the opportunity to attend COG last month now. So some of the things that came up there was the state is looking at a Senate Bill 743, and it's something to keep on your radar. And this is to, when you start developing projects, they're looking at vehicle miles traveled and not what's needed. So I think we're looking at an infringement on travel. So it's really something that even, I know the League of Cities, and we're very concerned about even all the cities within COG is looking at that SB 743. So it's something I feel like I need to put out that you guys need to be really cognizant of. I know you and Rob are already on the, you're already in tune with it, but I just, you know, you feel better when you say it. So I just really want you to be aware, because that could affect, they're going to tell you you can have less parking spaces when you build, but they're going to still park cars out of the street. So it's a weird way of starting to do the thinking out of Sacramento, and it's scary. Also, there's something that's really, I think, kind of it's down the line, but Fresno County Rural Transit Authority rolled out its 40-foot electric buses, full-blown electric buses. They're starting to use them. And on top of that, they're starting a phase 1, 2, and 3 feasibility study on a light rail system, mm-hmm. a monorail system that will travel the Kingsburg to Fresno corridor. Mm-hmm. And the second phase is Reedley to Manning corridor. The third phase is going to be looking at 180 Jensen mm-hmm. into that, and they're going to try to hub it up so that you've got really areas where you can have nice stations for the folks. And I think this is something that has been coming for a long time. And we were just at a 5 cities meeting last night, and I didn't want to bring it up there, but this will have a big impact, I believe, on one of our abilities to gain businesses within our community, because now you're going to have the ability for people to move with public transit within your smaller rural areas. So, and the last phase of that system, which is really interesting, they're looking at from Kingsburg to Visalia Airport and Visalia downtown. So they're trying to connect Visalia to Fresno, the central area. So that is something that it's just in the pipeline. It's looking at as a study. So kind of keep that in mind back when things are changing. I've had an Airport Land Use Commission meeting, we're still having a little fight with the city of Fresno, and there's some stuff, but I don't see a problem with that. 5 cities meeting, we're looking at branding a new name. City manager may expound upon that. So if she has anything to add, she can add that. That's all I have.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Fass.
I attended the self-help meeting at the community center last night about the new development that we postponed, that item 11. And my reason for going was I couldn't read the staff report that shows the size of the lots, and those lots that are on this particular section are from 6,000 to 7,000 square feet, so they'll be pretty good size lots, and that that was important to me. And also suggested that they make sure that they make Reedley people priority in their picking of what families will be brought forward to actually build these self-help homes. Last Thursday, I attended the League of California Cities meeting in Tulare. They spoke about water. John Amaral spoke about the Fryant Water Project and talked about farmland that will need to be fallowed to meet the state water guidelines as they are in law now. And they had a pretty good PowerPoint that I thought kind of brought home what is going to happen, unfortunately. And I sent that to Nicole, so if any of you on the staff or the council would like to see that, she has access to that. Then a couple of weeks ago, attended the Kings River Groundwater Sustainability Agency meeting. And that agency, we're working to finish our state groundwater sustainability plan, which is due in January of next year, which reflects back to what I just spoke about, water, and basically starting to put all of us in a box of what we're going to be able to do with water. Also attended the Upper Kings Water Management Authority meeting the day before that, and we approved our budget for this next coming year, and it was a lot lower than it has been in the past, which was good. And then back July 12th, I attended the pool movie night at the pool here in town, and that was a good family event. I saw a lot of families, a lot of multi-generation groups there, and I thought that the staff did a really good job of managing the crowd that was there. So thank you, Sarah, and your staff. Then just a couple of comments. I saw that we've been spending money on alley repairs, and I was wondering if behind Elizabeth Street, between Frankwood and Serrier, I know there's a lot of people that live in the alley back there, and there are lots of holes. I don't know where we are in putting priority for which alleys we're doing first, but I might suggest that that be one that gets looked at. And then lastly, I'm going to put a dampener on the night, or add to the dampener, I guess. I received this report, which is our sales tax report for the last, actually it goes back to 2009, so it's the last 10 years. And I see that our sales tax that we received last year was less than the sales tax that we've received the year before. And so I think, Paul, you're headed in the right direction in being cautious. And I'm hoping that somehow we can get some more businesses in town that will help us bolster the sales tax. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. I have nothing to report.
So a couple of things, and by the way, I'll make an opinion commentary on the sales tax. You know, every year we are seeing the state legislators remove more and more items from the tax rolls because they want to make it easier on individuals, and so it becomes harder and harder as now personal products are being removed from taxation, et cetera. So we keep our eyes on that. So on a good note, Mr. Beck, if you could take one and hand it on. On September 12th in the morning from 8 to 10, the Reedy Chamber of Commerce has teamed up with the Fresno Workforce Development Board and a lot of other organizations, the Small Business Administration, the Access to Capital Organization. You'll see all of the logos at the bottom. We're going to be holding a business expo, and the city is teaming up as well, so we'll hold it in our community center. We're going to be sending this out to all of our businesses. There will be all sorts of seminars for those couple hours that our businesses can attend on how to access capital, how to do dispute resolution agreements, how to work with employee issues, all sorts of resources for businesses. So we're going to start advertising this out. The chamber's going to start advertising this out, but please feel free to attend if you'd like. It really will be focused more towards businesses and on specific issues that they may have. But we're super excited that we're able to provide this to businesses at no cost. And the goal is, it's called Fresno for Biz, but it's not just in Fresno. That actually is more Fresno County. Fresno for Biz wanted to start with us, and then if it's successful, they'll roll it out to other cities around us and hold these sorts of expos in those communities as well. So I was very pleased that they chose us to start with. Really some phenomenal information that can be provided to our businesses. So I am hoping our businesses take advantage of this, and we will see, do everything we can to get the word out on this. So again, September 12th in the morning, 8 to 10. The other really exciting item, many of you remember that we still do have a Sierra Kings Healthcare District. They used to run the hospital. That district then leased the facility and land and operations to Adventist. So the Adventist Hospital is actually not owned by Adventist. It still is a Sierra Kings. That district has been in place. It never was dissolved. It has moved away from being an organization that provides healthcare services to really one that is based on that lease, paying off the bonds that were taken out a long time ago, and now they're moving more towards being a grant agency with the revenue that is brought back from the Adventist lease and other items. Hmm. They are finally moving forward in trying to recruit an executive director. And so they'll be meeting with me and one of the council members next week to talk about the community, just kind of needs we see in the community. It was interesting to me that it sort of popped back up because they've been so silent for a while. So I'm glad that they're going to have an executive director, which really highlights that they are still in existence. You'll see the press release go out in the Read the Exponent that is looking for a new executive director. It'll be a less than full-time position. I think they're looking at just part-time for now. So I just wanted you to be aware that that is going to be happening, and you're going to be seeing that and pretty excited about that. So we have some other updates.
Council members, I wanted to give you an update on a couple of the projects that we have going on, the development projects. We should see the paving start out at the Almond Grove project, which is at Frankwood, Shoemake, and Sirier, starting this Thursday. So by Friday, all the roads, Shoemake, Sirier, Frankwood, shall be paved fully. You will see out there all the power poles will still be up. They are required to underground them, but the utility companies are moving at their own pace. Unfortunately, there is a pole that will be in Shoemake Avenue, very close to the curb ramp, but it will be in the roadway. We are going to have it protected. We're going to have some crash cushions and other protective measures put around it to make sure it's protected, that it's protected and the drivers are protected. But it will be up, but it should only be up for what we're being told is about 60 days when the utility companies will get out and then take their lines and bring them down. So you may get comments saying, what is the city doing? They're leaving a pole in the middle of the road. It's out of their control a little bit. We do want to get that roadway opened up as soon as possible, but we're going to protect it as much as we can. Also the project El Valle Apartments on Dinuba, they'll be also paving on Dinuba and Hemlock on those areas too. So that'll be getting done the same day. In the next couple of weeks, we will see some more activity back out on Buttonwillow and Manning at the UHC project. They had to do some revision to their plans. They had to realign a sewer line because of location and presence of a fiber optic line. So that's been approved. We've gotten all their plans revised. And so they'll be out there doing it again. You will see then some more work and the detours happening on Buttonwillow and Manning. And so there'll be some more traffic maneuvers going on in a couple of weeks. We expect that to start. So just wanted to give you an update on those three items. Thank you.
You make a lot of people happy, John.
Yeah.
Thank you. Chief?
Good evening, members of the council. I just wanted to bring to your attention some activities that the police department's been involved in and some that we will be involved in here shortly, and then unfortunately I'll end it on a bad note as well. Last week, about 11 of the police department employees, 9 police officers, 2 of our professional staff, joined forces with the community center and Sarah's crew. And I got to tell you, I really appreciate everything that Sarah does and the cooperation that she allows within this team, within the city and stuff. So thank you, Sarah, to everything that she did to make our first inaugural the Cops, Jocks, and Kids sports camp that we had last week. It went over a 2-day period. It was last Tuesday and Wednesday, 6 hours each day, so 12 hours of an opportunity for our officers to interact with 30 kids from our community that participated in 4 different sporting events. It was soccer, baseball, basketball, and volleyball. And it was just a great opportunity to be able to interact with all these kids and to have our officers be part of the teaching, be part of the playing with these kids. We developed some really great friendships as a result of that. So that was really a positive thing because we know that our kids are our greatest commodity, and we have to be able to reach them early on to develop those relationships in order to make them very successful in the future. So that was a great event. That happened last week. Today we concluded I can't even remember how many years we've been doing it now, but probably about 7 years, of Bring Your Kid to Work Day. We had that at the police department, so we had an opportunity for employees if they wanted to bring their kids. We spent about 6 hours or 4 hours today, different activities, allowing the kids a different kids of our employees to be interacting with everyone at the police department doing different things. So that was a great event. We had about 30 of our kids show up today as well. So that was great. Tomorrow, school starts. So this is also a public safety announcement for the listening public. Kids will be out and about. There'll be a lot of traffic in front of schools again. And because of that, the police department has always, for years now, has always done a crosswalk detail on the first day of school, and that is to bring attention to the fact that school is back in session. People need to slow down, pay attention, get off their phones. And then we also have to remind kids as they're walking down the street that they need to get off their phones as well, because they can cause danger as well. And so tomorrow is that opportunities for our officers again to be in front of the different schools in town. We will also be swearing in tomorrow. I know we got a busy day tomorrow. Be swearing in a new police officer tomorrow, Callie Olivas. She'll be sworn in tomorrow at 10 o'clock right here in the council chamber. So if you're able to make it, we'd be glad to have you there. But then on a sobering, not so exciting note, if you haven't heard, yesterday we lost another police officer, California Highway Patrol. I know it's kind of near and dear to Councilman Beck because of his grandson is part of the Highway Patrol. Highway Patrol officer was shot and killed yesterday, and there is another one that is still in critical condition as a result of that shooting. Andre Moye was the Highway Patrol officer that was shot and killed yesterday. He is the sixth officer in California in 2019 to lose their life in the line of duty. That's just obviously six too many. And so officers, you will see officers wearing the traditional mourning bands that we wear on our badges in honor of the service and sacrifice that they made. And we will continue to wear this badge or the mourning badge on over our bands until the day of that officer's funeral. Mm-hmm. So when you see an officer wearing these, this is why they wear it. And again, you know, I just ask people in our community to make sure that they continue to keep our officers in their prayers. You know, a lot of times it is a very thankless job. You know, we do know that we are needed. We do know that we are appreciated. And it's just a sacrifice that they make every day, that the families make every day, that these officers come out and put their lives on the line. And, you know, this is the unfortunate side of law enforcement that most people just don't realize. So I just ask that we continue to keep our officers and all of our first responders in prayers and stuff because of the work that they do. So I just wanted to, again, remind you of some of these other events that we have going on. But thank you very much.
Chief, to give you an update, happened to be with my grandson today. The young man that was killed down there was out of Nelson's and his academy.
Oh.
So he just had come into the motor unit.
Yes.
And the second guy that was in pretty bad shape down there is going to survive, but whether he ever makes it back, it's a possibility of loss of a leg out of him. So.
Yeah, and you know, and it's interesting the as far as the connection, because mm-hmm. that second officer, the one that will fortunately survive, was also in the same academy as Officer Ibarra, who was in the CHP and came to us. They were both in the same academy class as well. So mm-hmm. obviously a lot of connections there and stuff. So again, tragic event, but it's just a sobering reminder of the dangers that our first responders face every day. So.
Chief, I just want to say sorry for your loss, and we will be praying for you and the rest of the team and for our first responders.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
So I think we can end on a more positive note, hopefully, here. Normally, it's Sarah who gets to have these really cool announcements and presentations, but I get to do it this time, and I'm going to do it. The Fresno Grizzlies contacted us just, I think, a day and a half ago. Very recently, they contacted us. They have a program in which they approach large employers like the city. The city of Kingsburg just did this, and the city of Tulare is going to be doing this on August 25th, where they feature a certain employer at one of their games. So Saturday, August 31st, will be City of Reedley night at Grizzlies Stadium, downtown Fresno. And exclusive for city employees and
the elected officials is a, if you choose to come, is a $15 ticket, which includes a $5 food voucher and an exclusive Grizzlies cap. So should be a lot of fun. It's Labor Day weekend, so if you don't have plans, should be a good time to come out with your family. They're setting aside approximately 60 tickets for us. Unfortunately, you have to buy them online. The link is down below. If you would like some assistance in buying them, I have no problem doing it for you, but they are only available online. So anyway, it's a, should be a fun night, and they're going to show us on the billboard, on the big billboard, that it's for City of Reedley employees. That'll say welcome. So anyway, just wanted to pass this out. So we're going to end this meeting on a positive note.
Sounds good. Be there or be square, right?
Yes.
Very good.
Sounds fun.
Any other comments or questions from the public? Very good. We are going into a closed session now.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, for the record, I'll read in one item on this evening's closed session, item number 16, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, subsection D2. It's conference and legal counsel, anticipated litigation, significant exposure to litigation. There's one potential case up for discussion tonight. Any public comments on that item are appropriate at this time, if there are any? If none, we'll retire into closed session. Thank you.